They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners. Thank you for waiting. We had to take a bit of a hiatus due to illness. I don't know if you've noticed, but sicknesses are just flying all over the place. I'm going to be trying to mute as much as possible my coughing, but it's possible some coughing might get through. The first thing I want to say, and Elliot, you don't have to respond to this, is I went to No Other Choice yesterday. It was fantastic. This man does not miss. I feel similarly about him as I do Wes Anderson, that even if the plot is subpar, which it kind of was in Wes Anderson's case with his latest, but was not the case with Park Chan-wook's latest, the filmmaking on display is just so much fun for me to watch. I mean, the dissolves, the editing, the shots, the different types of ways he films things, it's just so fun. And then the story, yeah, was hilarious. There's fantastic, so many fantastic scenes in here, really amazing. Continues to make very Coen Brothers-esque sort of storylines, but a little more, I guess, this kind of Parasite-esque in terms of what it wants to say about society, but a ton of fun. Elliot, you're not a big fan of the director. You don't have to tell me that you're probably not going to end up seeing it. But I did want to get your thoughts on, I think, maybe one of the biggest movie news stories as we look at 2026 is on December, I think, 16th. Both Denis Villeneuve's third Dune movie, Dune Messiah, I think it's just called Dune Part 3, and the Russo brothers' Avengers Doomsday are coming out on the same day. They've already titled this Doomsday. Very clever and funny. And Elliot, I have thoughts on this in terms of its impact on both movies and the film industry's continued attempts to try and recreate the Barbenheimer hype. But, you know, what are your thoughts on Doomsday?
not sure what there is to say about it. I have to wonder if they coordinated that. I don't know. Which, did they make the announcement of their release dates, like, at the same time?
I want to say Doomsday has been on this day for a while. So Dune Part 3 would have been the one that got, like, planted on the same time.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to imagine. Well, I just don't know. I don't know what the prevailing tastes are right now. I feel like I'm just so terrible at predicting what will be hits and what will be flops.
Mm.
Like, maybe there's a huge overlap in these audiences and they'll both benefit from the heck is the word I'm looking for?
Crossover appeal. No. Synergy?
Hold on a second. No.
He's gotta Google it.
Convergence. But at the same time, like I just said that I'm terrible about making predictions, so let me just go ahead and make a prediction here. I don't feel like I feel like Barbenheimer was such a perfect storm. It would be really hard to catch that lightning in a bottle again.
Yeah.
Because I think that Oppenheimer got a much bigger boost from Barbie than Barbie got from Oppenheimer. I think Barbie was always going to be a pretty significant movie event. And Oppenheimer was sort of benefited a lot from greater exposure because of this. I don't think Doom Part 3 or Doomsday really need that much exposure. So I don't really think that the convergence, that the benefits of Barbenheimer are necessarily aligned with deficiencies in or disadvantages facing Doom or Doomsday.
Yeah. I think if anything, this is going to end up being bad for Dune, because it's already going to have an uphill climb, because Dune Messiah is not a super exciting book. A lot of it is kind of people plotting and planning and walking around talking. There's not a lot of action to it. And I feel like, yeah, like you said, there's very little of people who weren't going to go to one who now will because it's a package deal. Whereas I very much agree. I think there was a lot of people who weren't going to go to Oppenheimer who ended up going because it was this a thing to go to both of them. And I think there was some people who, the other way, where they maybe wouldn't have seen Barbie, but then did because it was packaged with Oppenheimer. I just can't conceive of the audience member who would only go to one or would be convinced to go to both. That I'm like, if you're a big MCU person, are you really going to be like won over? Like, oh, I'm going to go see Dune Part 3 as well? That doesn't seem likely to me. It also seems unlikely because that is reliant on, right, someone having seen two other movies. And you know, let's not even mention that Avengers Doomsday is reliant on you having seen like 30 other movies. Whereas Oppenheimer and Barbie, it's like you can just plug and play. Just go to the movie that you want to see and then watch it. So I don't see this working at all. And I think it's interesting how many, I'd love for someone to write a book about failed Barbenheimer, post-Barbenheimer attempts at another Barbenheimer, and just really dive into, like, why does Gladiator 2 and Wicked, why does that not work? Because I think it's an interesting investigation into what makes people go to the movies, and what is, like, feeble studio execs trying to tap into the zeitgeist that they clearly are, that they only ever interact with through like their 10-year-old niece or something like that. Whoops, sorry, say that again, I muted you.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Are we going to talk about the new leadership at Lucasfilm?
Oh my goodness, this is such a horizontal move in my mind. I know people hate Kathleen Kennedy, and I certainly think the leadership at Lucasfilm has done things that warrant a distrust in their ability to make good financial and artistic decisions. I don't see how Dave Filoni and Dave Filoni's buddy are anything that would go like well. And let's not act like Lucasfilm has had like a golden streak of making great decisions, and certainly not in the post Rise of Skywalker Star Wars universe. I don't see how, I mean, who would say the Dave Filoni stuff has been the best part of this era of Star Wars? It's clearly been Andor by like a lot. I don't even think it's close. I think even people who are big Mandalorian fans would have to say, like, yeah, you know, Andor is probably better than The Mandalorian. So I don't see how this is at all exciting. And I would personally be much more excited if Lucasfilm announced that, like, someone completely new was coming in who had, like, a new vision for what we should do. This feels kind of like, right, the period between when, like, if you think of the period between the original trilogy and the prequels, there was books. That was kind of the main thing that people were getting. There was some video games too, but I think books were the biggest thing that people were getting in terms of Star Wars. And then in between the prequels and the sequel trilogy, it was mainly, right, TV shows like Clone Wars, or again, books, video games were the two biggest things continuing to move the needle. And I think what's odd about this now, post sequel, as we wait for kind of whatever the next thing is going to be, is it doesn't feel like there's any vision for what, you know, they want to be doing. Do they want to be telling interesting standalone sort of stories? I think that's the best direction. I think if you look at Andor, for as synergistic as it still is with Rogue One, it stands on its own very, very well. And even failures of some sense, like The Acolyte, I think failed more because, you know, they're not done particularly well, not because it's a bad idea to tell that type of story. I think it'll be interesting to see with the Ryan Gosling Starfighter movie, that if that does well, maybe we'll be able to see more of that and less of, you know, let's watch Mandalorian and Grogu go and meet 18 characters from an animated show Dave Filoni made 10 years ago. And isn't that so exciting? That's where I would hope we go. But with Dave Filoni at the head, maybe that's not as likely.
Yeah, that's pretty much my reaction. This is a fairly lateral... This is a lateral pass,
I don't know why I said horizontal.
I don't know. I feel like it seems to me... I mean, obviously there's plenty to be said about Kathleen Kennedy and her leadership. I mean, we don't need to get into that.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty clear that she and Dave Filoni, at least, are simpatico.
Mm.
And I don't know anything about this other person. Can't even remember her name.
Yeah.
But it seems unlikely that she's, like, an outsider maverick who's gonna have a radical new idea that will clash with Dave Filoni's. But maybe she does. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see. Anyway, I think that's more than enough banter. Elliot, let's get to the movie we're doing today. I'm very interested to know, why did you pick this movie to review?
No reason.
Okay.
I picked The Book of Eli. Oh my gosh. I definitely have the movie's information up already. Pay no attention to the
clicking,
clacking sounds I'm making. That's just something I'm doing with my voice. So this came out in 2010, directed by the Hughes brothers, who apparently are a thing. I've never heard of them. I had never heard of them before watching this movie, and this is the only movie of theirs that I've ever seen. But the reason I picked it is because this is another Western genre mashup. We tried horror Western with Bone Tomahawk. That didn't really work for Nathan.
Oh, boy.
So now I'm having another crack at it with The Book of Eli, which is an post-apocalyptic Western starring Denzel Washington, my hero, my king, as the titular Eli, as your archetypical classic Western hero, stoic, man of few words, with a strange sort of thing that he carries around. Like that just always happens in Westerns. People are always carrying around things. Interesting stuff. Yeah. And so the plot is Eli has a book that it's, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler. This is a spoiler podcast, so yeah. I'll just say it's the Bible. It is ostensibly the last Bible, the last extant Bible in America. And Eli wants to bring it to where it's needed. And he is opposed in this by Carnegie, isn't that his name? Played by Gary Oldman, who wants to use it essentially to, like, I guess, control religion or something.
Yeah.
Be like one of the old evil popes. So yeah, and that's pretty much the setup. So there's plenty of action, plenty of quotations of Bible verses, a heaping helping of slow motion, shaky cam, sepia filter. This is like, I would say, at the very peak of post 9/11 movie making.
Okay.
So, grim, gritty, heavy emphasis on, like, destruction, decaying infrastructure, all the kind of stuff that characterizes so much of post 9/11 films. Yeah, so that's a very extended intro. I watched this for the first time. I can't remember when or why, but I liked it, and it does have a bit, I would say, a bit of a cult following.
Yeah.
It's not the most beloved thing in the world. It doesn't have a following, like, on the level of Rocky Picture Horror Show. But it is, it does have an audience, although generally this movie came out, got mixed reviews, did okay at the box office, and now it's pretty much been forgotten by all but a few of us fans. Or I guess I wouldn't call myself a fan, but people who watch it and remember it. And now Nathan is a person who's watched it and remembered it. But Nathan, what did you think about it? That's the important question.
Yeah, I think I feel bad. I'm going to have to disappoint you again. No. I couldn't really get super into this. And I think there's a couple of reasons for it. But I think maybe the biggest one is the movie is just kind of corny. Like,
wow, interesting.
I mean, you already said, right? He's carrying the Bible. And I'm a Christian. I think we've mentioned that on the podcast before. I'm a religious fella. I've been around the block a few times, and by block, I mean the Bible. And it's so weird for me to see a movie with, I feel like it sounds like a really interesting conceit, like guy in the post-apocalypse with the only Bible left, and people still, right, some people still remember Carnegie and Eli. Both Carnegie wants it because he's like, I remember having it as a child, like it was impactful to me. And Eli is right, he has found it and carries it around and reads it every day. And it's just, it feels very silly, I suppose, that Carnegie believes he can control religion and, like, solidify his status as the leader of this colony that he's had and attract more people to the colony with...
Doesn't he know about the Protestant Revolution?
Yeah, I just don't. And I mean, there's a lot of really easy jokes to be made. If you've perused the letterboxd for this movie, it's basically full of reviews saying, OMG, it's like The Road meets VeggieTales, or it's like Mad Max. I'm trying to think of what the Mad Max one was. It was Mad Max Bible Warrior, something like that. And
that's not even good. I really don't like the letterboxd funny with heavy inverted commas reviews.
I know. Well, I just think Letterboxd is bad for reviewing because I don't like the joke reviews. And then every time I see a review over two paragraphs, I'm like, that's too much time spent on a movie. if you're not like a professional reviewer. I don't want to read that much of your thoughts if you're not like someone who's paid to do it. But yeah, and maybe as we talk about it, I'll be able to solidify more of my feelings. But I think my initial reaction to the movie was, it's okay. It's got some good action scenes. It's got, you know, good acting. Gary Oldman just yelled his way through the 2000s of just great performances of him screaming at people.
Everyone!
That was the exact one I was thinking of, yeah. Him and Leon the Professional. And yeah, Denzel Washington is talented. It was kind of ruined. We already said this is a spoiler podcast, but I already knew.
Oh, I man, know, that I'm was sorry. Gonna be my favorite, or the thing I was most looking forward to asking you about.
Did I see the twist with Eli? Yeah. I don't think I would have. I think I would have been very surprised. I watch movies with like a, until it tells me something, I assume it's telling me everything it can. So I get really won over by twists because I like turn off my brain, and at the end I'm like, that's crazy, dude. Kaiser Soze, that's who he was? No way. I don't spend any amount of time trying to like puzzle out the movie, really. But yeah, unfortunately, going into this, I did know the biggest twist. Maybe right impacted my ability to. I think this, I might have known it because our father might have seen it, and I loved asking dad about movies he had seen that I wasn't allowed to see yet. And he always told me like a blow for blow every single detail of the story. And so I feel like it might have been spoiled for me because I asked dad, how was the movie? And he's like, actually, it was crazy. The dude's blind the whole time.
Well, that's interesting. For my money, I still enjoy this movie. I don't love it, but I like the conceit. I think Denzel is great.
Yeah.
I think it's just a simple, well-executed Western. And I'm a bit of a sucker for Westerns. And I'm especially a sucker for combining Western with another genre. Bone Tomahawk. Which, of course, did you like this more than you liked Bone Tomahawk?
Yeah, I guess I'd rather rewatch this than rewatch Bone Tomahawk. So, yeah, I probably like it more than Bone Tomahawk. I feel like it has some of the same issue as Bone Tomahawk, where I feel like the themes of the movie are buckling under the weight of the genre trappings of the movie. And I think that's less present in this movie than Bone Tomahawk, as well as it's just like, you know, whatever, we're not going to talk about Bone Tomahawk again.
Well, no one gets it as good as Nate.
Yeah, obviously. I don't know
if that was your big sticking point.
I don't like it. I'm not a fan. I mean, so, you know, I tell my mom, I tell my mom all the time that sometimes I talk about a movie and she's like, it's just gross. I'm like, that's a legitimate critique. Like, if a movie makes you feel gross and repulsed and you go, I don't want to ever see that again, like, I can't argue with that. That's a legitimate way to feel about a movie.
Well, yeah. Anyway. I mean, there's just different levels for people. Like, I don't find that scene pleasant, but it doesn't repel me in the same way. But like, I think I've mentioned before, I've seen like part of Hostel. I find that movie to be high. Talking about Hostel, we're not talking Book of Eli, so let's talk about the Book of Eli. And I want to start with something that I really don't like about the movie, which is the way it looks. I actually think that the action is filmed pretty well. It's usually in fairly wide shots, and sometimes the camera's spinning around for some reason. Like, there's a part where he fights a bunch of guys in a bar, and the camera is... It's the like classic thing where it's a bit... It's kind of, like, angled low and looking up, and it's doing a big spin around the group, and things are clearly sped up a little bit in the edit, which is a little cheesy, but it's fine. I think it's better than... something like, for example, Batman Begins, where, or like Taken, where you just can't tell what is happening. Like, for all you know, Batman is just playing rock, paper, scissors with these guys, yeah. And they're dying when he wins. Because you just, all you just see is like a shot of Batman's elbow.
Yeah.
An ambiguous man sort of flying away. So yeah, and also, I thought the shootout at the house, that was pretty good. It's not a true one-er, or I would be really surprised if it's a true one-er, because there's these two groups. Eli and his group is in a house, and Carnegie and his group are outside, and they're shooting at each other, and so the camera, in an apparent unbroken shot, I'm guessing that they stitched it together, is sort of like moving from the house to the two Carnegie's posse and back and forth and back and forth, to give you updates on what everyone's doing and what everyone's situation is. I thought that was really good. And like sometimes, like the camera goes through a bullet hole. That's not actually, surely that can't be possible. but maybe they did it with CGI. I don't know. The point, but I'm saying that I don't like something is what I'm saying here. I don't like the sepia filter. I think that looks awful. I don't understand this era, the early 2000s era of desaturated colors. I think it's just so boring. I hate it. I'm not a big fan of shaky cam, even when Kathryn Bigelow does it. There are times where I'm like, all right, steady down here. We don't need to have... Take the camera off the bucking Bronco, please. Yeah. And yeah, it's just not much fun to look at. Like, it's just this brown, beige blob.
Yeah, I would agree strongly with both of the things you said. I think some of the action is really great. I also had in my notes that the house shootout is really cool. I like the floating camera going between the two groups in... Yeah, and an apparent one-er. I think it's really neat. I think one of the best things to come from the, like, 2000s into 2010s and now even to today is even, like, kind of B-tier movies putting in the effort to do one-er or one-er apparent fight scenes. I think that's really cool. I mean, Zombieland 2 has a one-er fight scene, and I just think that's so neat. And yeah, I also had that first fight scene where he encounters the cannibals and fights them in the tunnel. It is so good. It looks sick because it's done in kind of wide where all you can see is the silhouettes of people. It's kind of similar to a little bit the Old Boy fight scene in the hallway that's really famous. But it looks cool, and it's great. And so, yeah, the action for the movie in general was a really big positive for me. In general, having to look at something that looks like puke for all of the other scenes was a big downside for me. And yeah, I very much agree. I'm trying to think of movies that get away with this sort of ugly looking filmography well, and I just don't. I mean, The Road, which we reviewed, kind of gets away with it because the sense in the book is that the world is like colorless and drab, and so the world of the movie being very colorless and drab, I think, fits. I think something like Fight Club, where the story is kind of repulsive and the filmmaking is gross, I think it works for some sense, but I don't think it works here. I don't feel like the story and tone is despondent enough to match how dreary and bleak everything looks. It's not the biggest offender. The biggest offender in my mind, I don't think I've called out this movie yet, but a movie that lots of people like that I think is just horrible, horrible, horrible. Amelie looks terrible, is about a terrible person, and it's just an unpleasant movie to watch. Anyway, as to this movie, yeah, there's a lot of pieces of filmmaking from the 2000s that I don't think aged very well, and in my opinion, maybe aged the worst of any film. Like, I struggle to think of stuff from the 80s that as soon as I start watching it, I'm like, oh gosh, this is in here? This is awful. This looks terrible. And the 2000s, yeah, their obsession with this dreary, bland, colorless, sepia-toned nothing is just, it doesn't work. And I don't think it has aged very poorly. And it makes a lot of scenes just look terrible. It looks like a Linkin Park music video or something, which is not like something you want your movie to look like, in my opinion.
I don't understand that reference, but yeah, I agree. I think it's probably, well, I don't want to speculate about people's motives, but if I could just speculate about the Hughes brothers' motives here, I would say it's just because they thought it looked cool. Like that's why this whole era looks like this, is because they're like, oh man, yeah, that's gritty and cool, grounded, realistic.
Yeah. It's so realistic to see the world as no one has ever been able to see it before.
Yeah,
so
I'm sitting realistic. Right now, I'm in a room that's painted green and blue, but all I see is just like, it's like somebody has smeared a bunch of taco meat across my eyes.
Yeah.
So all I see is just brown.
Yeah. Don't get it.
Well, yeah. Maybe it would be fascinating. This is the kind of stuff that just really interests me. I'd love to know, like, who was the first person who did that, who was like, I want to make my movie look awesome. I'm going to desaturate all the colors. And then why did everyone else go like,
do it.
Dude, that is so cool. That is awesome. I'm going to do the exact same thing.
I don't know. I do want to know, I mean, let's get into, that's sort of maybe the technical aspects of the movie. Let's get into the characters a little bit more. I think the biggest two to talk about are obviously Eli and Carnegie. I think Eli is all right as a character. I do think, as I mentioned before, I am religious and have read the Bible at times. And I think that that impacts how I see Eli, because in the same way that being a drummer impacts the way you watch Whiplash, where you're maybe not able to say, this is a good movie, but like the drumming, it's not all that. And I know because like I am a drummer. But I was thinking of in Wake Up Dead Man, the newest Knives Out movie. It's religious. There's a religious character. And there's a couple of moments in the movie where a character articulates a theological point or a Christian idea in a way that I really thought was very realistic and true, that I was like, yeah, that's kind of what I would say in answer to that question, that rings very true to me. And there's just very little of Eli that rings very true to me as someone who, and a part of it is kind of the heightened sense of the thing that there, at least it seems, in the world of the movie, Eli has been called by God, I guess, to bring his Bible to the printers on Alcatraz. And so that's, right, not a realistic, or it's not a scenario I've been in personally. But I just didn't, I kind of found a lot of the scenes where he's explaining things to Mila Kunis's character to not be an interesting exploration of, you know, this is what faith looks like in this new environment, or this is what faith looked like in the before world and how it impacts the way we see things. It more felt like, yeah, VeggieTales, or like, you know, here's kids first, you know, why is the Bible great? It's because it's great, because God said so. I'm like, okay, that's true, but that's not what I would say is the defining feature that makes it great. Or at least the defining thing that I would tell to someone who had no concept of it.
Wow, that's very interesting. I didn't get that, although when you talk about it, I could definitely see it. I mean, I'm also a religious man.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I think about, I have discovered recently that one of my excuse me, one of my favorite subgenres of movies is sad Catholics having borderline esoteric theological disputes with each other.
Yeah.
As exemplified in Silence, Conclave, and The Two Popes.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite, like, Christian movies. Yeah. Or movies about, I guess, Christian issues that deal with it, in my opinion. And obviously people have different ideas, but in my opinion, deal with it in a way that's very sensitive, very realistic. And the thing that kind of links all three of them is just the suffering. Like, just how hard it is, how hard it can be. And, right, I don't want to have too esoteric a theological discussion myself, of course, but, like, a lot of people, a lot of Christians emphasize the, like, suffering as a way of sort of, like, not just getting closer to Jesus, but, like, understanding Jesus's suffering, especially at the end, at the cross. And there's definitely not anything like that in this movie. And I'm not saying, right, it's... Maybe I should try to stop saying right as well as stop saying, you know, because I say right a lot.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I made a movie and then someone was like, it didn't have this exact thing, very precise thing that I like in it, I would be like, okay, but that's not what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here and say that, well, the only way for this to have been very impactful would be to sort of bring that into Eli's character. But I do think that something a little more in-depth would definitely have benefited the movie. And obviously the question of religion surviving after the apocalypse, which ostensibly is not the apocalypse described in Revelation, that's an interesting question. That's an interesting idea. It doesn't really go anywhere. But then again, like, I'm torn about this because, right, the film... See, there it is. Right, there it was.
Yeah.
It just happened right then.
It's true.
Oh, there it was again! I guess goodness. Right then doesn't really count. Because the filmmakers obviously weren't trying to do that.
Yeah.
And I think... there's a difference between they're trying to do something else and they're not trying to do something at all. I almost said it right then. If they're not trying to do anything at all, then I think it's a legitimate thing to say, like, well, it would have been nice to have done something. But I do think they were trying to say something about the religion as a tool that can be used for good or for ill. I'm a man of God and a man of history, so I'm also not gonna sit here and say that everything that's ever been done in the name of God has been godly.
Yeah.
But I do think in the end it's a fairly broad statement about, like, sometimes it can be good and sometimes bad.
Yeah.
Which is true. That's true.
Yeah.
But there's also more to explore there.
Yeah. And I guess every time I review a movie, I do try to think what is the intention of the people who made this? What are they trying to achieve here? And how much do they succeed in what they're trying to achieve? And I guess I just struggle to say, like, they weren't trying to do anything other than make an exciting movie, because I'm like, then why even include stuff like Eli talking to Mila Kunis's character about the Bible? Why even have the Bible be the crux of this thing? It always bugs me when people introduce what to my mind are unforced errors into the plot and subtext or text of their movie, that I'm just like, if your goal is this one thing, why even include this other thing if you have to know it's going to muddy the water? Or even if you don't know, like, I can't change the fact that it did muddy the waters for me. That I like the action. I think the action is really good. But yeah, I'm just like, why even have this religious angle if you're going to do it so broadly or so pointlessly? I mean, I like Gary Oldman as Carnegie, but I don't feel like I get any insight into, yeah, like you said, obviously religion has been used as a tool and has been used to justify a huge number of things, both very good and very horrific. And so a movie with two characters representing ostensibly those two sort of sides, that Carnegie wants to use it to control and consolidate power, and Eli wants to use it to bring hope and faith to people, or at least bring it to, you know, people who can spread that sort of thing. It's just disappointing to me that then there's no interesting discussion or articulation of those two ideas outside of just their presence in the thing. So it, yeah, it's kind of, which kind of goes into, right, some of my dislike for Carnegie, that I'm like, I like Gary Oldman. Again, he gives great yelling performances. It's tough for me to really love his character because it feels like a lot of the scenes where it's just him aren't interested, like aren't providing a compelling character portrait. I mean, even outside of it's not communicating anything interesting about these ideas that I'm talking about, he's just not an interesting sort of character. Like, it seems like he's just evil, and that's kind of the beginning and end of the discussion around him.
That's true. I mean, that's not unusual for a Western.
Sure.
I can't think of a single nuanced villain in a Western off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Unforgiven. Sort of, I mean,
really? Gene Hackman is nuanced? I don't really like Unforgiven.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Me neither. So that's, I'm just throwing things other people might say out there.
Well, I guess, I mean, it's another thing where I didn't get that, but I can definitely see it. Mm. And to be honest, that does kind of diminish it a bit in my eyes.
Good, but still, good.
I think that for me, I was carried through by the charisma of the performances. I mean, Denzel, he's got an inexhaustible source of charisma. And Gary Oldman is a very effective yeller. And yeah, I like these. I enjoy these archetypes. I like the stoic, gruff, lone wanderer and the power-hungry, megalomaniacal, small-town governor.
Yeah.
That is typical Western stuff. Although I do acknowledge, It could absolutely be better. And this is one of those examples where, I think you might have already said this, and maybe I was just sort of zoning out for a part of it, but introducing the prospect of something not so superficial, but not following through on it, kind of makes it worse than if you had never raised that as a possibility in the minds of the audience in the first place.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I said. You know, if this movie was just wall-to-wall, sick, post-apocalyptic, Western-style shootouts and fights, I'd probably say, yeah, this is a great movie. It would definitely jump up in my ranking, because I'm just like, yeah, they just wanted to make a cool movie with, you know, some cool actors doing some classic stuff. But the fact they introduced this other stuff, I mean, I have to review what's in the movie and the quality of it, in my view. I did want to ask.
That didn't salvage the raid.
Well, that's because the raid does have other nonsense that is so bare bones. It's like, why even bother putting this in here? That's so stupid. I know, I was thinking of the raid as another movie where I'm like, it needs to be simpler. I just need, my action movies have to be so simple.
my goodness. Because I think that the raid is, we don't need to get into it.
As simple as it could possibly be. I agree. I did want to, when you saw this movie, did you know Eli was blind?
Unfortunately, I also did.
Okay.
I can't remember, I can't remember, anything about the circumstances of me first watching this movie. Can't
Weird.
Remember when I watched it, why I watched it, or why I knew that Eli was blind. But I did know, and I think that this is really unfortunate that neither of us are a case study for whether or not the twist is effective. It's certainly unlikely.
Yeah.
I can kind of maybe get him winning a fight in fisticuffs. And one of the things that I did like is that watching it with the knowledge of him being blind, you can absolutely see moments where that is affecting the story.
Yeah.
Like, every time he looks at the sun, or he is pointing his face to the sun, he's trying to get a sense, based on the heat of the sun, of where it's at, so he knows which direction is west.
Wow.
I really like that.
Yeah.
And same thing with this first action scene. I'm pretty sure he backs up into the shadow so that they will find it harder to see him.
Yeah.
That's really good. I really like that as a detail. I still am not sure if he would be able to just hear without Daredevil superpowers, obviously, when somebody is swinging at him. And I definitely think that in a gunfight, when a bunch of people are shooting, surely there's no way you could distinguish, oh, this guy is, standing at a 30-degree angle from me firing, and there's another guy 2 feet to his left and 3 feet behind him who's also firing, and I can hit them both with pinpoint accuracy.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they do a really good job of making it as believable as they can, and I certainly think it achieves movie believability. I would be interested to know if, watching it without knowing the twist, if your reaction would be, that's impossible.
Send us an email.
There's no way. Yeah, maybe we should have called in Dad if he was the one who spoiled it for me. But yeah, I think it's, I guess, a surprising twist. I feel like sometimes people just invent twists for the sake of twists, where it's just like, isn't that crazy? I'm like, yeah, dude, that is insane. I wouldn't have predicted he was blind. I guess this is a fun little thought exercise. Think of other movies that would be like a crazy twist is they're blind the entire time.
Oh.
Obviously, any action movie becomes, unbelievably ridiculous. But
yeah, Top Gun Maverick, blind.
That's really funny.
They don't even let you in the Air Force if you don't have 20/20 vision.
Yeah.
And he's like, can't even see it all.
I feel a need for glasses. That's so funny. Top Gun Maverick. The very end, he's reading the fighter jet manual in Braille.
And nobody else knows. So somebody comes in, they're like, my goodness, we've entrusted the safety of this nation to a blind pilot.
That's so funny. Oh my goodness. That's crazy. But I've completely been derailed. That's so funny. You go ahead.
It's interesting that blindness is a fact for this other character, and we should probably move over to Mila Kunis's character, Solara. And her mother is also blind. And I think they're trying to, in the scene when Solara's mother comes to serve Eli some dinner, and she says, "I can't know where you are unless you make a sound." I think that's them kind of trying to preemptively resolve this in the audience's mind. So they're like, oh, blind people. Every blind person can see perfectly through sound.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is true. But if you're blind, hey.
Yeah, send
please
us.
Please send us an email.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that, I mean, if she hears him sort of tinkle his little necklace.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, I can perfectly navigate this place. Obviously, of course, Denzel is not necessarily acting blind. Like this woman, I don't know if she is blind. Maybe she is. But she is acting blind because she's not moving her eyes very much. I think there are parts where Denzel is moving his eyes, which is not necessarily realistic. Mm. Blind people, like, they still have can feel their eyes, right?
What do you mean? What?
Well, like, they if a person's blind, that doesn't necessarily mean that they couldn't move their eyes.
I have no idea. I guess it depends on what is causing the blindness. Blind. Yeah. Mm.
Well, again, blind people, please write in. let us know what your experience is. But yeah, so that, I mean, it's interesting. It's not realistic. I don't really care. It's not really a realistic movie. It's funny. It's an interesting twist. It's not the kind of twist. I think that the twist in Shutter Island does make you reevaluate the movie on a pretty significant level.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing here. You're just kind of looking for, like, oh, yeah, there he is.
He can't see the guy who's hung himself in the closet. He's reacting to the door. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Stuff like that. Maybe there's that one point where this bald brute in Carnegie's employ is aiming a gun at Eli, and Eli's not doing anything. So maybe Eli doesn't even realize.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh, what? And he puts his gun down because he's so undone by Eli's intense fortitude. But really, Eli's just trying to figure out what's happening.
Yeah. Food for thought.
So yeah, let's talk about... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't really have much to say about Mila Kunis's character, Solara. She's kind of the classic, you know, companion to the silent Western character. So they have to talk because someone's there asking them. I'm just kind of, it's fairly by the numbers in my mind. So I don't have much to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, she's not given a whole lot to do. She eventually becomes Eli, and of course they're going to make the Book of Solara. They're not. I don't think that's going to happen. But it's clearly what they were aiming for.
Yeah.
I mean, the ending is some serious sequel bait. I'm not even sure, why does Eli die? He seems like... I mean, I know he gets shot, but when he gets... they travel all the way to San Francisco from there. And when they get to Alcatraz, he seems fine.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe he dies of a completely unrelated ailment. Like, he has a sudden heart attack and dies. But yeah, so she's there. Yeah, she's wide-eyed and innocent. And he's grizzled and cynical. And that's their dynamic. It's a classic dynamic. I enjoy it. I think it works all right here. Again, as with a lot of the movie... Something that I think works for what it is, but definitely could have been put to greater effect. I mean, Eli saves her from this gang of ruffians, which I thought maybe was the resolution of a bit of an arc for him, because there's a time at the beginning, or near the beginning of the movie, where he does not save these two people who are being attacked. And I thought, I was surprised by that. And afterwards, I was kind of like, Eli, why would you do that, man? Yeah, that was pretty cold. And then he saves her, but But see, I don't even know if that's supposed to happen because the movie doesn't really emphasize it that much. I think if it would be more clear if when he's listening to these two people get attacked and he's like, stay on the path. It's not your business. Stay on the path. If he had been listening to Mila Kunis, Solara get attacked and he's whispering the same thing and then he does intervene, I think that would make it more clear. But yeah, as it stands, it's just like he shoots these guys with arrows. It's cool, I guess. No, it's cool. I mean, it's cool to shoot things with arrows.
Yeah. I'm out of anything else to say about this movie, so I'm ready to get into a rating if you are.
Well, I think the music is generally generic, but I like the main theme.
Oh, really?
I thought it was pretty unique. Do you have any opinion on it?
No.
Okay. Well, let's just get to ratings then.
Yeah, like I said, it's an okay action movie with kind of a really, really subpar religious sort of subtext or thematic arc stapled onto it. Because of that, it kind of brings it down in my estimation a little bit. But overall, it's not like a bad movie. It's enjoyable. At worst, it's just generic. So it's going to get, you know, a 6.2 out of 10 from me.
Yeah, I like this movie. I think it's a classic Western in a new setting, which I enjoy. It's got all the cool Western stuff. If you're a fan of Westerns, I would definitely recommend this. If you just want an undemanding, simple movie with some cool action and some good acting, where the bad guys lose and the good guys win, I think this is good. I think we need this kind of movie. I'm going to give it a B-.
Wow. All right. We need this kind of movie? That's crazy. That's a crazy thing to say.
Well, maybe we don't need them, but it's nice to have them.
It's true, yeah. Every movie's nice to have in some way, I think. Anyway, let's get to recommendations. Mine.
The movies of Joseph Goebbels. Nice to have.
Have you seen, actually, this is, they, on, I think, Amazon Prime has a documentary about Rothstentel. I don't know how to pronounce her name.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've heard about the documentary.
It's supposed to be really, I really want to watch it, because one of the, like, movie news people who I like listening to, he had it as one of his favorite documentaries from the year. He said it was really interesting, so I really want to see it. Anyway, recommendations. I'm going to recommend Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men. It's another post-apocalypse, or kind of, like, in the apocalypse. Like, they're on in their way to an apocalypse, but it's more dystopian, I guess, than post-apocalypse. Dystopian story. No one can give birth. It follows kind of the same conceit. It's a grizzled, cynical man who's protecting a innocent girl as she's being moved from place to place. A lot of really fantastic oners in this movie. It's also kind of got a sepia-toned sort of vibe to it, although I think it looks a lot better than in this movie. And, yeah, it's got some interesting sort of things. It's a little bit about immigration, or at least I've seen a lot of people say it's about immigration. I don't know how much I believe that, but it's a good movie. Good performances. It looks really great. It's got, again, I think if you enjoyed the fight scenes and some of the cinematography from this movie, I think Children of Men is a great addition to that sort of style.
That's interesting. I second that recommendation. I seem to have had a memory of you not liking that all that much.
I think it's a little overhyped, but I also think maybe I could rewatch it and then I'd feel differently. I think it's a little overhyped, but I still think it's worth watching, I guess.
Well, my recommendation is going to be the original Django. I chose this because it's a classic Western. It's got your gruff man of few words, lone wanderer. He's got this unusual... This was one of my favorite movies of the 70s, I think. Didn't end up making the list, but it's a fantastic, just meat and potatoes Western with a lot of great action, really good music. Yeah, it's a really well done classic spaghetti Western. And I think it works really well with The Book of Eli. Maybe even a little better because it is absolutely not trying to be anything more than what it is.
Yeah, I guess I could second that. That's an all right pick. Maybe I just don't like action movies. Maybe that's the real issue, because I'm trying to think of what's the pure action movie that I like, and so many of them I'm like, I like them, but they're just like, it's just an action movie, who cares? So maybe I just don't like action. Anyway.
Well, life is hard and full of disappointments.
Of course, of course. One of those disappointments maybe was us being a little late. We apologize for that. Send us an email. You know, are we way off on our understanding of blindness and blind people? Do you have a movie you want to request that you think we might like? Send us an email. We love to get those. We're going to be back next week. Another very exciting episode, hopefully. I think it's a special episode, so we've got something cooked up for you. Anyway, we hope you have a great week, and thank you so much.
Wait.
Whoa,
wait,
what?
What episode number is this?
179.
Okay. So, yeah. Next week is a special episode, a very special episode. I am freaking excited for it. Okay. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. Please tune in for it. I'm so excited for this next special episode.
All right. Wow. So a special shout out for this next special episode from Elliot. So be sure to tune in. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a great week.